fellow rebel capitalists. Hope you're well. I'm sure all of you have heard the news that Kyle Rittenhouse was found not guilty. And you're kind of asking yourself the question, okay, what happens next? As soon as I heard that, my first question to Josh was, well, are there any riots? Is there looting? What's happening now across the United States? I think as far as the title of this video, will this decision lead to a civil war? And I think the short answer is no, but I think it's far more important to look at the nuance in what's involved. What I mean by that is I think when you look at this court case and how divisive it is, and we're going to get into that in a moment just on Twitter, you have to ask yourself the question why. I think this court case and whatever comes as a result of that, hopefully we won't get riots and looting and whatnot, but I think the probability is pretty high. Is this the symptom or is this the cause? And I would argue this is only a symptom of what's happening beneath the surface. And I'm not talking about racism or systemic racism or any of those buzzwords that you want to use. I'm talking about the fourth turning. I'm talking about these 80-year cycles where regardless of what the topic du jour is of the time, society takes sides. And as a result of society taking sides, the economy starts to crumble. And then what usually happens is those people that make up society look for a quote-unquote strong leader that offers some sort of radical change. And many times, maybe not in the United States, but in other places, that's led to a totalitarian dictator. Now, in the United States, let's focus on that. If you guys saw the interview I had with Neil Howe, and he is the author of The Fourth Turning, we went over these 80-year cycles throughout U.S. history. And he pointed out the fact that every single fourth turning we have had in the United States has ended in war. Maybe it's not a civil war, maybe it's a world war, maybe it's a revolutionary war, but it is a war nonetheless. And so my next question to Neil was, okay, if every single fourth turning has ended in war, what you're telling me now is that we are currently at the end of another fourth turning. And he said, that's correct. And I said, okay, well, does that mean that this has to end in war? Is there another way out? Is there a way that we can have a soft landing, for lack of a better term, for this civil unrest and divisiveness that we have, that we see at the end of these fourth turnings? And his answer to me was, well, it's never happened before, so the probability of that is very low. And I think it's important we recognize that, because when we look at the two sides here, and it's night and day with this decision, I think it's easy to kind of point the finger at that person or this person or the other side, because for whatever reason, you think they're ignorant. Maybe they're listening to CNN and the other group is listening to Fox News. You know, whatever your opinion is. But I think it's far deeper than that. And you have to recognize that the divisiveness that we see and whatever violence, hopefully none, but whatever violence comes as a result of this has nothing to do with this case. And I would argue that all the violence and the looting and the riots we saw in 2020 as a result of other court cases had nothing to do with that actual case. It had to do with the underlying issues. And, you know, as my old business partner said about an employee when they were having some sort of issue, it's never about what it's about. And I think those are very profound words. And it's the same thing we see right in front of our eyes today. So, and let me explain that further. So if you had an employee that was, let's say, showing up to work late, or this was a good employee that had been loyal for a long time. And, you know, at surface levels, oh, I slept in, or oh, I did this, or I did this. And what you would find is when you would sit them down and really start doing some digging, it's really not about that. It wasn't about their discontent with their job, if they were making that claim. It was that they were really having problems with their wife. Or maybe they were really having problems with a child that was you know, not doing well in school, or maybe had some sort of learning disability. And this was putting them under a tremendous amount of pressure. And they weren't just coming out and saying that, but that was really the result of their anxiety or their maybe lack of performance in the workplace. So that's what we're saying here, is it's never about what it's about. And I think it's the exact same thing with this, if we do see riots and looting as a result of this court case. It's not about the court case, it's about the underlying issues. So looking at this through the framework of the fourth turning and trying to figure out which direction we go from here, I think you've got to look at the nuance of, so the fourth turning is really taking a step back. It's zooming out and looking at these 80-year cycles. But then I think you have to focus and narrow it down to what is actually creating the divisiveness we see today at a detailed level. So there, I think you've got the wealth gap. I think you have money printing. I think you have the welfare state, because so many people feel disgruntled. So many people feel as though there is no hope. And rightfully so, because subconsciously, they realize that we're not living in a world where you're guaranteed to be successful the harder you work. That was the world I grew up in the 1970s and the 1980s and the 1990s for the most part. But now we've got an inflation rate that, let's say, is running at 10%, and the yield on the 10-year treasury is 1.5. You say, oh, George, what does that have to do with the Rittenhouse deal? Well, it has everything to do with it, because it goes back to hope. And if people take their excess production in the form of quote-unquote money, dollars, and if they're not able to keep up, if they're not able to pay the bills, if they can't maintain their purchasing power, then what do they have to do? They have to become a speculator, and they have to go further and further out the risk curve. And every 10 years, we go through one of these boom-bust cycles where they lose everything. And they might not be thinking about it consciously, but subconsciously, they realize that the opportunity and the probability of them improving their lot in life is, I was going to say slowly decreasing, but today maybe rapidly decreasing. And you combine that with the shock of going to the grocery store over the last year and seeing the food prices continuing to skyrocket. You see the cost of energy. I went and filled up my tank here in Phoenix, and I could not believe it. The gas prices were, you know, depending on whether you're getting regular or super or whatever, I think it ranged from like $4 to $4.50. In Arizona, I've never seen anything close to that. And it's true, that really doesn't affect me to a great degree. But for someone who is living paycheck to paycheck, I can't even comprehend living in the world right now. Especially if you've worked at your job, let's say, for 10, 15, 20 years, and you've just seen, although you may be getting a raise every once in a while, you still see your purchasing power and standard of living continuing to decrease. And then you combine that with the components of the fourth turning and what we usually see at the end. And this is when the political leaders get far more divisive, and the media, I think, has a lot to do with what we're seeing. I think social media has a lot to do with what we're seeing. But again, I think this is a result or a symptom of us being at the end of a fourth turning. I don't necessarily think the media and social media is the root cause. So what happens is people that feel as though they have no hope, then they start to get angry and they want to release that frustration. They want to blame someone, because it's very difficult to look in the mirror and admit that you're the one to blame for your lack of success. And sometimes you're right, sometimes you're wrong. And I think there's various shades of gray. But it's far easier for people to blame the other guy, the other side, and then get very hostile and very angry. And as they see their standard of living continuing to decrease because of the inflation that the Fed and the government have created, then they take that pent-up energy and they direct it towards whoever the news is telling them to direct it towards. And what exacerbates the problem and what really forces them to dig their heels in and take a stronger and stronger position is the echo chamber that is created by social media. From the standpoint of, if you are the typical CNN viewer or Fox viewer, for that matter, the messages that you're going to get from your Twitter feed or from your Facebook feed, as an example, are going to just confirm your bias, because they know that's what you're most likely to click on. And there's very few people out there that are like the individuals in the rebel capitalist community, where they actually understand the dangers of living exclusively in this bubble of confirmation bias and this echo chamber. Very few people want to push back on their own ideas. And again, it goes back to that loss of hope, and it goes back to this sense of cognitive dissonance that would create further anxiety by trying to poke holes in your own worldview. I think all of these are contributing factors to what we're seeing play out right now in this case. And I'm not here. If you want my opinion on this, I think he's not guilty. I think that's pretty obvious. And I think what's great about this case is that it was shown live. And so I don't see how you could have a position that was definitive, that was anything other than that. And I understand how you could have a different position. Totally agree. I respect that. But to have a 100% definitive opinion that this was inaccurate, I think that's tough when you've got the whole thing being live streamed. I don't think that's really relevant, to be honest with you. I think what's far more relevant is what we are talking about and how this, and to understand that this is merely a symptom, and the cause of this divisiveness is what we should be far more concerned with. And if we look at the root problem, the probability is most high that what we are seeing with social unrest, a lack of hope, this divisiveness in society, in politics, in social media, in the mainstream media is going to only get worse before it gets better. So let's go into this. Let's just go to Twitter. And let's see what's trending. And of course, this is trending. You know, what's even more interesting is I was on here before and I went to this trending, which was Antifa and BLM. So this is good news. After a not guilty verdict, the scene is pretty chill, quote unquote. That's fantastic. I hope it stays like that. I'm not optimistic that it will, but you know, it's very rare to have big riots in the winter for whatever reason. So hopefully that'll kind of subdue the volatility. But as Chris Cole teaches us, you can't get rid of volatility. And of course, he's talking about the financial markets. But I think he also says this within the context of society at large, where you can only suppress volatility. You cannot get rid of it. And it's like that volleyball or beach ball that you try to submerge underwater, that you're suppressing the volatility, but you're not getting rid of it. Because at some point in time, that beach ball is going to cut loose. And when it does, it's going to shoot up in the air 20 feet. And my concern here is the same thing's going to happen with civil unrest, rioting, looting, as a result of this, well, not a result of this case, but what we're going to see as the result of the fourth turning, which I think this case is going to exacerbate the underlying volatility that was already there. And therefore, when we do see the next round of riots or looting, hopefully they won't come now, but if they come in the spring or whatever, they're going to be that much worse. Now, I'm not sure if I'll be able to find the specific tweets, but they were just dramatically different, and that most people were really taking sides here. And it was either something like this, where Antifa BLM, will have to be held accountable for any destruction. Well, I guess that's really saying a lot right there. That's definitely divisive. And see, these people are actually, you know, I don't know this, you know, I'm not a big fan of Antifa or BLM, not because they want to point out racism or anything like that, but I think they're Marxist organizations. And that's dangerous to me. And so that's why I'm anti-Antifa or BLM, if you want to say it that way. It's because of their push towards Marxism. It really has nothing to do with their views on race or anything like that. Yeah, so this isn't helping, you know, this type of, and even if this is your view, I don't, you know, kind of dunking on the other side, I don't know that that's a real good idea right now. Yeah, so here we go. And this is from the media, but this is the view from a lot of these people I saw tweeting earlier that live within this echo chamber. And it's, you know, Kyle Rittenhouse trial was designed to protect white conservatives who kill. All right, so I'm not able to find the, this gal here is, as you can see, is really breaking down. I saw a lot of people in tears as a result. I mean, this gal is just going into like spastic attacks. Is she having a heart attack, or is she actually doing that on purpose? And I mean, I don't even know if that's a gal. It might be a dude dressed up as a gal, but I mean, I don't even know what to say about that. I'm kind of at a loss for words. I will say that this is just an example of kind of the level of emotion, I think, that's being felt on both sides. Well, if you go through here, you see a lot of people that are basically saying this kid got away with murder, and then a lot of people say that that this decision was correct. And again, although I'm sure everyone has an opinion on this, I've expressed my opinion. At the end of the day, in the grand scheme of things, I really don't think that matters. I think what matters is really to understand the underlying issues here, and that the probability is high they're only going to get worse before they get better. So you can go through these the Twitter feeds yourself. And, you know, unfortunately, too, I do see people in the mainstream media that are really stoking each side, not just the people who are sympathetic to Antifa and BLM, but also people who are sympathetic to the other position. And that, in my opinion, is disgusting. All right, guys. Well, you know what, Josh? Let's go ahead and take some calls. I wasn't planning on doing that, but I'd really like to get everyone's opinion. Oh, there's a super chat. Okay. Yeah, and just put the guys, he'll put a link in there, and I'd like to hear from a couple of you just to hear your thoughts on what's happening with this trial and maybe what it means for the bigger picture. George, how do you define silent majority, and do you believe they will rise given their eagerness to put on? Well, Forrest, I think that we are the silent majority, my friend. So I think the people who value freedom, liberty, and free market capitalism, not to say that if you have those values that you can't get the medicine. I don't think that's true at all. But I think that we are the people who have those values and that really prioritize individualism. We are the silent majority. And so I use the thought experiment of Phoenix, Arizona, 4 million people. And if you would have had 300 or 400 people come out with the lockdowns, or during the lockdowns, with their guns, I think they would have gotten wiped out almost immediately by the military or the police. But if you would have had all 4 million people come out and with no guns and just peacefully say, no, we're not playing by your rules, I don't think there's anything the military, the police, or the government could have done. They would have just had to accept the people's will. And so I think the majority of people out there do not believe in mandates. I think they are opposed to them, but they're just going along with them. I think the majority of people are opposed to this push towards authoritarianism. I think on the left and the right, I think what you're hearing on social media is really a vocal minority. And the majority of Americans still prioritize the rights of the individual. So, hello, caller. What's your name?
Hi, sir. My name's Kevin Garling.
Hi, Kevin. Thanks for calling in. So what's your opinion on what's going on here with this trial or maybe the underlying issues?
Well, I think what we're seeing in the country, honestly, is like what it means to be an American. You know, half the country believes one thing, the other half believes another. And it's becoming so divided that, you know, you're seeing Americans in Montana having more in common with people in rural Russia than they would in California. Yeah, and you see something similar to what I feel like happened during the Spanish Civil War, where just the left and the right divide just kept getting bigger and worse. And you witness this occur over and over to the point where it erupted. And obviously the currency collapsed. We can easily see that in the United States. And obviously we're seeing the currency be printed and we're not seeing it go into the economy. What do you think your opinion is on it? Do you think we're going to see balkanization, or are we going to just see this like slow, just demise in the country?
I hope we see a slow demise in the country. And I mean, I hate to say that, but I think I think Japanification is the best case scenario.
Now, do you think that's possible in America? Because obviously the Japanese have a majority homogenous country. Obviously there's differences depending on where you go with Okinawa.
And a large trade surplus. There are a lot of differences there.
Where the United States is so different.
Yeah, I mean, you look at them having kind of a deflationary deleveraging, and maybe that was true with the balance sheet of the average Joe and Jane, obviously not the balance sheet of the government. But I think that if we, but it is lower growth, and it is negative growth over a long period of time, which basically decreases the standard of living to a certain degree. Now, there are arguments there that the population is going down, so on net balance, the standard of living isn't decreasing. But in a deleveraging, usually that's the case. So in the United States, I think we could have a similar deleveraging. It might not be deflationary, but it could be inflationary. So you've got lower rates of real growth, or you have negative growth when you adjust for inflation, but you still have nominal growth at, let's say, 3, 4, 5, 6%. Mm-hmm. Now, and I think that's kind of possibly a grind down in the economy. But unfortunately, I think the social unrest and the civil unrest, because of the dynamics at play with the fourth turning, continue to get worse. And I hope, obviously, that that doesn't lead to a civil war. But unfortunately, I think it's going to get worse before it gets better.
Now, do you think something like Soviet Union, like 1990s Russia, is possible? Like, you see this hyperinflation, no jobs, but at the same time, now we're going to have an importation of labor debasing wages, and obviously not having families grow internally, but having immigration try to build growth, which we haven't seen because they don't have they are not having children as well, or the money's leaving the economy.
Yeah, I mean, that could be one way out. That gets sticky, and who are you letting in the country? I think, unfortunately, right now, we're not being very careful about that approach. You know, I'm someone that thinks we should have completely open borders, but there's a big caveat there, that if you had open borders, you would have to completely eliminate the welfare state. And, you know, that was Friedman's approach. And I think there's a lot of merit. Now, under our current conditions, obviously, that's not realistic. So I think we should be far more selective about who we let in. But that could help smooth out some of the problems we have. That is definitely true. But that creates problems in other areas. Again, it goes back to what Chris Cole always teaches us, that you can't get rid of volatility. You can only suppress it. And unfortunately, you know, we've only seen unfortunately, the only thing that gets us off this course and on to a different trajectory is a massive shock to the system. And usually that is through war. I just hope that somehow we can have a similar shock to the system without having to go through something that is violent.
Do you think that could be something like China or Russia basically saying, hey, we're not going to use the dollar anymore, and going back to either a precious metals based currency or a cryptocurrency that's backed by it? Because they're stacking, China has 20,000 tons of gold. Obviously, they're hedging. They don't want to ditch the dollar right now because it works out somewhat for them. But, you know, I could see them being like, hey, this is a sinking ship. Let's not be attached to it. We have all the industry.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think that's something that exacerbates the problem of social unrest, because that would increase the level of inflation dramatically in the United States. And that's when people usually get the torches and pitchforks, is when they can't afford to put food on the table, energy, or shelter. And that would make the big problem we already have far, far worse. So I don't know if that gets us off our current trajectory onto a path that's more sustainable and less violent.
I think the only solution, honestly, if you look at the United States, I think if you were to hedge your bets, and it sucks to say, you know, I've obviously lived here, I assume you've been born here.
Yeah.
I don't see much of a future of the country. Financially, we're in massive amounts of debt. Obviously, you've talked about it ad nauseum, and culture, we're too divided. Like, I would say the best bet is to put your money in silver and try and hedge your bets outside the country if you can.
Yeah, the problem with that is we're the cleanest dirty shirt.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I'm someone that has the resources and the flexibility to live anywhere on the planet Earth I want. And right now I'm choosing Arizona, Texas, or Florida. And I've been, as you guys know, I've been over 40 countries. I spent a lot of time in Medellin, 4 or 5 months a year since 2015. It's one of my favorite places on Earth. But right now, I just can't go back, even though I have people there that I consider not just friends, but family. And it's very sad to say that, but it's true. And if you're someone that values freedom and liberty, you don't have any options, in my opinion, outside of the United States right now, other than a few small countries that could just flip on a dime or turn on a dime. And I think there's far more stability from a standpoint of freedom in Arizona, Texas, and Florida. As crazy as that may sound, looking at it through the lens of what we're talking about with the fourth turning and these symptoms we're seeing with the divisiveness and the Rittenhouse trial.
Oh, so if you do have, like, you know, like you said, those several states, because, you know, again, the United States, like you said, is a great place to be due to the fact that it is stable, you can own firearms. Texas, you know, you're looking for relatively stable areas. For Americans who can't leave, like, their states due to jobs, what would you suggest? Would you say find a community, stuff like that?
Absolutely.
Obviously, absolutely. Having food things.
Yeah, this is really the good news. This is the good news, is it's all about community. I mean, look at where I live right here in Phoenix, as an example. I live in this area, Central Phoenix. It's called the Biltmore. And if you go around my area, it's open, but there's quite a few people wearing masks at the local Whole Foods and whatnot. But if you go down to, like, Gilbert or Chandler, I mean, nobody. Yeah, it's like going over to Naples, Florida. I mean, they're living in 2019 down there. So that would be a way that someone here locally could just find a little bit more freedom just by moving, like, a half hour away from where they currently live. And it just, again, it shows why community in your local area is just so important. And we can get frustrated with the politicians at the state level or the federal level, but what we also have to understand is the sheriffs are very important at a local level. So if you've got a really good sheriff that values the Constitution, you know, regardless of whether they come down with a XYZ mandate, a lot of times those sheriffs will just say, nope, we're not enforcing that. And they've got the power to do that. And so that's a really important, it's another really important point that illustrates why that community is so vital. And if you combine that with, it sounds crazy, but I think having an RV with food in the driveway that you can just get out of Dodge for a couple weeks. And if you got some gold and silver and maybe some Bitcoin, I think that's hedging your bets to the best of your ability. I'd also add educating yourself and making sure that you're aware of what's going on in the world and the direction we're going, and not just burying your head in the sand.
Well, I don't have any questions. It's a pleasure talking to you, sir, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for the call.
And I used to live in South Phoenix. Arizona's a wonderful state. Best of luck to you. Just be careful on if you can't get rain.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for the call. I appreciate you watching the videos.
This podcast is brought to you by Rebel Capitalist Pro, the best online investing research. I have teamed up with Chris McIntosh and Lynn Alden, two of the best in the business, to create Rebel Capitalist Pro and give you the tools you need to build wealth and thrive in this crazy world of economic insanity. Rebel Capitalist Pro is jam-packed with Chris and Lynn's incredible research. We have live stream Q&As where you can ask your questions directly to Chris, Lynn, and myself. And the best of all, there's an online member forum which allows you to network, learn, and explore ideas with like-minded individuals. What are you waiting for? Check out Rebel Capitalist Pro right now at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. Take action today and do something your future self will thank you for.
Hi, caller, what's your name?
Patrick in Denver, Colorado. Patrick.
Hey, Patrick, thanks for calling in. What do you think of what's going on in the world right now?
Just listening to a lot of the videos. You've been hitting a lot of short clips about, like you just said, about tensions seeming to rise a little bit, especially with this. And I have a family member who just seems to hate old white people, and I don't want to get too much into it, but I definitely agree what you're saying with the Civil War, and I guess
I think he froze.
Boomers.
Oh, okay. So we just lost the last like 15 seconds of what you said.
Okay, so the whole feud between the boomers and millennials. I think one of the big ways of trolling the boomers would be a lot of millennials. Obviously, a lot of people are not working, but for them to not work would mean these boomers not being whole on their retirement accounts and being able to collect on that, because obviously their Social Security has been increased. And so I think the tensions are going to really flare between that. Obviously, the media has pushed that kind of whole thing for the past 5 years or so about, you know, Social Security drying up and things like that.
Unfortunately, I think they have to default, but the question becomes how. So I don't think they'll outright default by not paying back Social Security. I think they'll pay it back with cheaper dollars, which unfortunately, if the millennials are trolling, quote unquote, the baby boomers through not paying into Social Security, at the end of the day, they're basically trolling themselves through increased inflation and a reduction in their overall purchasing power.
Okay. Yeah, I'll have to look into kind of how that would shake out. Just a funny kind of anecdote here. So my girlfriend's dad has been listening to your videos, your whiteboard videos. He doesn't know that I've been a longtime follower of you, but I think it's funny hearing him in the morning get a cup of coffee Sunday mornings or on the Sunday night streams. And I just pretend that I don't know what's going on. I'm just I'm a dumb rube considering what he knows about me. So, but I do hope that is something we kind of bond on. He just bought a cabin up in the northern Colorado, Wyoming border. Yeah. And so it's just out in the mountains. He bought that, I think, September last year. And so that's kind of our safe house area.
Smart.
Yeah.
That's really the good news is regardless of your political affiliation or your, whether you're a baby boomer or Gen Z or Gen X or millennial, whatever, the one thing we all can agree on is the rights and how we should prioritize the individual. And that's really the focal point of Western civilization and what has made it great. So, you know, whether you and your, was it your father or your
father-in-law? Girlfriend's father.
Okay. Your girlfriend's father. You know, you guys might disagree on a lot of things, but the fact that you both believe in the rights of the individual, that puts you on the same team when it really matters. And I see a lot of people on the left that would claim to be liberals and progressives and everything else, but they do not favor these mandates. They think the state has gone too far, and they're kind of looking back on them at their own belief system saying, no, wait, the whole reason I'm a liberal or a progressive is because I'm anti-authoritarian, and I see this authoritarian approach, and it isn't something that I agree with. So you might have wildly different views on the economy or minimum wage or all these other things, but I think right now that doesn't matter, and what does matter is what people, I think, are agreeing on the most. And that would be that silent majority that I was referring to.
Agreed. Yeah. I think I might buy him a Rebel Capitalist t-shirt for Christmas and see what that does.
The only place you can get him is you got to go to Rebel Capitalist Live. I don't sell them, but I give them away there for free.
Okay. Yeah, fortunately, we do agree on a lot of things, but... just wanted to say one last thing that I really appreciate all the content that you've put out in the last couple of years. And then I was curious if that video that you got the standing ovation in New Orleans is going to be posted ever, or if that's in the...
That's up to Brian. He's the guy that runs the show there. So he was saying that he might post it. If not, I just did another presentation last weekend at Mark Moss's conference called Market Disruptors. And for whatever reason, I got another standing ovation there. So if Brian doesn't make that public, maybe Mark will. And but really, it's me just getting up on stage and talking about a lot of the ideas that we discuss on this channel. But I think it's just when people hear it live, it has a far greater impact, and that's and it resonates a lot more and makes an emotional connection. And I think that's why we've gotten the standing ovation. I just want to be clear. I don't think it has anything to do with my speaking ability. I think it's more that these ideas are really resonating with the silent majority. And that's something that I think all of us should be excited about.
Agreed. Well, thanks for having me on here, George. And let's go, Brandon.
Yeah. It's great talking to you. Thanks for calling in. All right, man. Well, let's take one more and then we'll call it a day. All right, caller. What's your name?
Omar, O-M-A-R.
Omar. Awesome. Yeah. So thanks for calling in. What do you think about kind of what's going on with the trial and maybe the underlying issues that we've got in the world today with the fourth turning?
Yeah, so, well, first of all, I just want to say I love your work. I learned so much from you. I just recently graduated university, and kind of like when I started listening to you quite a while ago, and as I talked with my professors, like, it's like this stuff is like so way over their head. Like when I talk about the actual economy, even though they're economy teachers, it's like the Austrian thinking is like completely out of their realm. It's like something they can't even fathom. It's unbelievable how crazy it is. Like I've never seen anything like it. Like, honestly, you changed kind of my whole mindset.
Well, I sincerely appreciate you saying that. I appreciate the kind words, and I thank you for watching the videos. I realize that you take time out of your schedule, and that's your most valuable resource. As far as the professors, it's not just the Austrian view. I don't think even a lot of the Austrians don't understand how the dollar is created. They don't understand the banking system. They don't understand the balance sheet of the Fed, the commercial banks, repo, the dollar funding markets, the dollar monetary system, the euro dollar market. They're just completely out of touch with really what makes the world go round.
Fair enough. What's it called? I came on to ask you because I'm from Canada, right? And this place is like zombie land, to be honest with you. Like I can't go anywhere without seeing a mask. And I'm pretty much like I have to get my mom to go into Costco to grab my shopping for me and my wife, because I'm not about to put on the mask. And
you can't leave the country, can you?
No, I can't leave. Yeah, my boat sailed, if that makes sense. I wanted to go to the US in 2019, but I wasn't as blessed, if that makes sense, in terms of money wise. Now I am, and I don't know honestly what to do exactly, because I feel like if I stay, I live in Toronto. That's like the main, and I feel
like my buddy Rich Cooper's in Toronto as well.
It's like I can't go anywhere, man. Like they literally, like I sat down with my buddies and they started checking for vaccine passports. I'm not about to take medicine passports, and I wasn't about to take it, and they kicked me out literally in the restaurant after I ordered the food and stuff. So.
Wow.
Like, I'm kind of I don't know what to do. I have, like, I'm just gonna be honest with you, because this is the first time I'm talking to somebody I really can learn from. Usually when I'm talking to people, like, they're listening to me. So when I'm talking to you, I actually want your kind of opinion on what would I have, like, $300K. I will not go into debt with the bank. I will not do that. Like, I refuse to do business with the bank, and I can purchase like a small home in the suburbs. The problem is that I don't know if isolation is kind of the solution. I'm constantly trying to kind of build the community around me, and I've built like a few people, I've woken a couple of people up, but what would you do if you were in my situation? Like, I have a wife, I don't have any children.
I'd leave. I'd get the hell out of Canada. I mean, it's in my opinion, it's a similar question to what would you do if you were in East Germany and you saw them starting to build the wall? I'm not saying that that's what's going to happen to Canada, but the probability is above zero. I mean, they already won't let you leave unless you have the the medicine or something like, or they won't let you back in or something like that. And I think that, you know, it's at a certain point, no matter how much gold or how much Bitcoin or how much the nominal value of your stock portfolio is, if you ain't got freedom, you got nothing.
Exactly.
And, that would be my number one priority. So I don't know if you even can leave, but if you could,
there's no way. Like, I tried everything. I tried getting a pass from my doctor. I tried to bribe his ass. Nothing. Like nothing. I don't know. I won't be able to leave like at all. So I'm kind of wondering like, what is my next step as somebody kind of who's stuck in here? there is another state that's kind of, more conservative, or I would say that I'm like an anarchist. I don't believe in like government at all, but there is a state that's a little bit more conservative, right leaning, and they kind of value freedom. The problem is that my family and any community I have is here. So if I was to go there. I'm kind of like gambling on the fact that I can build another community there, if that makes sense. And I don't know.
Yeah, I don't have any good answers for you.
No,
I wish I did.
I don't know what to do. I mean, I'm kind of stuck, but
absolutely stuck. I don't know that you have any options. I mean, I'd try to maybe get money out of Canada, but again, that should not be your number one priority. The number one priority is you, your physical self. You know, one thing I might do though is I might try to prepare or a window of opportunity, okay. Right? So let's just say in 6 months, they lift the restriction for whatever reason. And I would have my bags packed, figuratively speaking. So if there was that window of opportunity, I could just bounce. I mean, I'm gone. And I mean, I would take that 300 grand. I'd either get it outside the country if you can't, I would try to get it in to Bitcoin, gold, whatever I could take on me. I mean, if I was you, I'd be looking at Rolexes. I'd be looking at watches.
I have like 300K dedicated towards like the house, like to buy a home. My net worth is as much. I'm in like the seven digits now, but.
Yeah, that's congratulations there. But that's what I'd be looking at is how, you know, what could I buy that would give me liquidity and purchasing power that I could carry in my bag, you know? And so, you know, and I don't know the number that's right for you. You got to make that on your, you got to come to that conclusion on your own. But that's, I think, probably what I would be doing if I was in your position. And it's not a solution. I wish I had a better answer for you, but I think that's the only thing you can do right now.
Fair enough. I mean, I appreciate that, but sorry, I just wanted to kind of get your opinion on that. Otherwise, like to the topic that you're discussing, for me personally, honestly, I hope that kind of something pops up. Like for me, like I'm not trying to be negative about the Civil War thing, but I feel like if a Civil War was to happen, a lot of people would get exposed. A lot of the I don't know what to call them, the leftists or whatever, like, because those, I don't feel like those are the people that were really kind of want to go into war, if that makes sense. Like if somebody was to really go into war, it's the people who keep the guns, the, you know, the ones who aren't as scared, if that makes sense, aren't as government dependent, if that makes sense.
I think you hit the nail on the head there as far as exposure of bad ideas. And let's look at World War II. And you know, prior to that, the 1920s, we had this massive push globally, but more specifically in the United States, towards eugenics.
Yes.
That's a place where we do not want to be. That, you want to talk about a slippery slope. Yeah. And what happened is World War II exposed those bad ideas in a shocking way. And that's what got us on a different path. And I think, you know, kind of that's, I mean, again, I hate to say that that's where this is going, but, and I hate to say that would be a benefit, because I don't like saying there's any benefit from war for obvious
reasons. Yeah, I agree with you. I didn't want to sound like I'm promoting it.
If we had a big, civil war or something, or war with China or whatever, I think that would expose a lot of these bad ideas.
I think the shock would really kind of like, okay, wait a second, there's something really, I don't know. It just seems like, because I don't know what else could possibly be like this, like massive wave of consciousness that can come to the people for them to kind of realize that something is actually going on. You know what I mean?
That's like a great way to say it. I think,
you know what I mean? Like, we need this like massive wave of consciousness to hit people to get us out of this. Cause it's very tough, man. This is from somebody who, like, I dedicate a lot of my time trying to just talk to people in order to, you know, just show them that at least they're in a biased position. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, right.
I don't claim that I'm ever right, but I understand that I'm in a bias. I have my biases.
Right.
Those people, they don't understand that they have a bias. They think that, again, the state, the priest class is the only thing that is correct. You know what I mean? The white coats. Like, what's the difference? Honestly, what's the difference between the priest class of the church and then the priest class that we have today? Like, there's no difference. Whatever they rule, that's what's correct, and everybody has to abide by it.
Yeah.
Man, I'm sorry, I'm exacerbated, but it's just
No, man. No, I feel your pain. I think you get it. You see the world for what it is, and obviously you're very frustrated, but you've got every right to be. And I just sincerely hope and pray that the people in Canada just wake up and practice that civil disobedience that I think is necessary to really get you guys back on a path towards freedom and push back against this attack on your freedom through this authoritarianism. And that's one of the things that I'm trying to do with the channel and with the content that I create is I'm trying to hopefully prompt the awakening, to use your terminology, without us having to go to war. And it's one of the reasons why I'm trying to encourage people like you to start their own YouTube channel, to start their own podcast, to start their own blog. And if I can get 1,000 people to do that, in addition to all the other things that I'm doing, then I think maybe we can have that awakening without the violence
having
we've had to have in the past.
Yeah, I appreciate all the great work that you're doing, man. Thank you so much for your time, and keep up the great work.
Yeah, thanks for calling in. Thanks for watching the videos. Hang in there, man. All right, guys, great conversations there. Kind of a dire topic, sobering topic, but we need to have these discussions. Always remember that we have got to stand up now. We have to have a sense of urgency. We need to continue to fight for freedom, for liberty, and free market capitalism. Because if we don't, I think we're going to wake up in 5 or 10 years and we're going to be in a world where we do not want to live. And we definitely don't want our kids and grandkids to experience. We don't want them growing up in a world that was similar to what we saw in the 1930s or in the 1940s. We want them to grow up in a world of opportunity and a world where they can, where they're free to choose. And in order to make that world a reality in the future, we've got to stand up today and have that sense of urgency. We'll see you on the next video.